Imagine Draken. It's Snescapades, a chronological journey through the North American Super Nintendo library with a few pit stops along the way. We play them briefly, we judge them harshly, we rank them. That is pretty much all you need to know. I am Chase Keys.
I'm Emmy Zero.
And folks, we have once again gone back in time, or well, back further in time to September 1991. We are going to talk about some of the games that came out that month again. We've already talked about these once a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
We talked about these before the pandemic was a thing. Can you believe that?
That's bizarre to think about. That doesn't even seem possible. And yet it was. That is what we did.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're going to do it again. I'm curious to see how our impressions of these games have changed. I think we were mostly pretty positive about all of these games originally. And I don't remember where they are on our list now, but I know they have shifted around somewhat from the relative places where we originally put them. So we'll see if that kind of reconsideration of some of these continues. This will be our only featured episode for September, because after this, we're moving on to the wrap.
Yeah, we are moving on to the wrap after this. So,
so
we just decided, you know, all those other games, we've talked about them before. We don't really need to go too deep into them again, but you know, there's not nearly as many for the wrap this time around as there have been for previous wraps that we've done. So that will also, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Let us have a little more time to talk about these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we do have three to talk about today. And what do we have today, Chase Keys?
Well, today, for the people, we have Super R-Type, Draken, I don't know how that's supposed to be pronounced, and UN Squadron.
All right. Well, what do you say we get into it? What do you say we talk about the type, which is R, and which is Super?
Yeah, let's talk about that. So, Super R-Type, this is a classic shmup. It is a horizontally scrolling shooter. You play as a person piloting a spacecraft, although, you know, the person is not really all that consequential to the proceedings here. It is all about the spacecraft.
You do see, before the start of the first level, there's a nice little animation of the ship being like raised up on an elevator platform for launch, and there are a couple of tiny little pixel people kind of like doing like adjustments and like work on the ship, like a couple of little engineers that are about like 3 pixels high, and I really like that. So yeah, people are definitely taking care of this ship. I like you, I assume there's a person inside it, but I don't know. Yeah, this is the ship is going to fight some aliens in a thing that I feel like there is some explanation of the basic premise of this in the instruction manual, but nothing in the game at all.
Yeah, so I don't really know what the story behind this one is, and I don't know if the story is all that important to a game like this.
I don't think it's consequential. It's not very consequential in this case, certainly. And yeah, it's, you know, there's some kind of invading alien or possibly robot army. And this is a sequel to some other R-Type games. So this is that alien force coming back again. And you're going out there to fight them and push back the invasion. So real quick, who made Super R-Type?
So this one comes to us from IREM, who I'm fairly certain developed and published this one.
Mm-hmm. Looks like
I don't think anybody else really something about Playtronic here. I don't know what role they played in all this, but maybe they helped publish it in Brazil. This is pretty much just IREM as far as the North American version is concerned. Mm-hmm. This is pretty well-known franchise. They've had arcade games, and it's a pretty classic one of these shmups, from my understanding.
So the main gimmick here, because a lot of these games have some kind of specific thing that sets them apart in terms of control mechanics or progression or what have you. This has a basically an additional unit you can acquire that flies alongside your ship. You don't start with this, but you can get it fairly early on, and it it stays with you, you know, ideally throughout much of the game, which is this kind of circular pod that you can basically like detach and have like fire remotely at things from like another part of the screen, or just attach to the front of your ship and provide extra firepower to you. And it's a pretty cool element, but overall, this is like a very straightforward shmup, and I think it's pretty good at you know the things you want a game like this to be good at. I think the level design is pretty solid. There's, you know, some good enemy variety. It's some interesting kind of setups for how things attack you on the screen. I think this game is fairly notable for the amount of slowdown it contains, though, on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like, I think that even among games of this genre from this time period, the slowdown is a very prominent thing about this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it was quite as bad as Gradius 3 was. That game was real bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's actually kind of weirdly helpful in this game. Like, you can... Like, I don't think they... Obviously, this was not the intention, but this is... This is, on balance, a pretty challenging game, even on, like, easy mode. I didn't really see any difference between playing this on easy or normal. But, yeah, the fact that it does slow down when there's a lot of things on the screen, which can include things you have caused, because you can charge up your... You can either do, like, a rapid-fire shot of your sort of standard laser, or you can press a different button to charge it up. And if you charge it up to full, you get this big... like kind of, you know, multi-part laser blast that goes across the screen, and that will always cause slowdown. So you can kind of use this like almost like accidental bullet time in this game in some ways.
Yeah.
But it's not the intention, but it is kind of a nice feature that ended up here. But yeah, it's man, the early Super Nintendo was just really, really not calibrated for the kind of games that the kind of shooters that people were trying to put on it. And they solved all of this later on. Like we, you know, the next few shmups we play in like the, you know, forward looking part of the show, I think are going to not have this problem at all, but boy, howdy did the games from this era have it.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, other than the slowdown, you know, I think this game plays pretty well. It's pretty fun. I like that they've got a super easy mode where you get to keep all your weapons between lives, which is kind of nice. It's a nice way to ease yourself into the game.
It is nice, yeah.
You know, I tried doing it on the next level higher after. I tested out the novice difficulty and went up to the easy difficulty. And, wow, there's a big jump there, I have to say.
Like I said, I found very little difference, basically no discernible difference between this game on easy and normal. So if you want a real easy mode, yeah, go down to novice. This is a game that does restart you at the beginning of the stage when you die. So it can get pretty aggravating if you keep dying at like the same place in a stage. But... being able to keep all your weapons definitely mitigates that.
You know, this game does give you a lot of power-up options, and a lot of them don't override themselves. So, you know, like, you'll get, you know, like, a missile at first. It just kind of, you know, like, has you tossing out, like, a little air-to-surface missile. But then it upgrades pretty quickly to, like, a homing missile, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
A bunch of different kinds of laser weapons, your... pod can upgrade to different kinds of weapons, which is neat, and you can, you know, throw it out as a weapon itself, and you can attach it to the front or back of your vehicle, which kind of gives you, you know, like, hey, do you want more firepower, or do you want the ability to shoot behind you, which can be pretty handy in some circumstances. Yeah, it's up to you. The game gives you some choice there.
Yeah.
Once you get up to the higher difficulties, you know, you do run into like the problems of the death spiral, although the death spiral isn't as much of a problem here because, as you said earlier, you start back at the beginning of a level, which is frustrating in its own right. But, you know, I guess it.
But it does give you, it does not box you in the way that like a mid-level checkpoint or just like an immediate restart could if you lose all your power-ups that way.
Yeah, so it's probably the better option there. But I don't know. It almost makes me wonder if I'm the issue here. Like, you know, I keep, you know, we've talked much about the death spiral in these kinds of games where, you know, once you lose a life, you're depowered, and now, you know, there's a good chance you're not going to get back enough power-ups to make a meaningful go of the game once you've lost that first life, so you might as well just reset once that happens. I don't know, like, is that what people who play these kinds of games want?
I do think that there's an element to these games that is about going into sort of a flow state that's as much about dodging as it is about anything else. And in a lot of cases, that is still something you can do even without power-ups. So I think that maybe it's not as much of an issue for someone who's like keyed in on this genre, because they will just intrinsically have a better, I don't know, method for staying alive until they can recoup some of those power-ups. And, you know, I don't really know. I can't really say off the top of my head whether having the chance of having to work your way back up from zero if you screw up is, like, actually an appealing part of this or not. But it doesn't seem like a problem for people who play a lot of these games. So I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. Maybe complaining about that sort of thing just, you know, all I'm really doing is just demonstrating, you know, how much of a shmup noob I really am. Because I, you know,
it's, shmup noob, you know,
I'm not super into these kinds of games. I've been known to enjoy them on occasion, but they're not the kind of game that I go and seek out usually. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, complaining about this isn't really a valid criticism as far as like fans of the genre would be concerned. I don't know,
but it is a valid criticism as far as your experience of playing it goes.
Yeah,
so,
I suppose,
you know,
I do like the enemy designs in this game. There's a lot of really big ships that you get to take apart. There's a lot of really gross looking bioorganic kind of stuff. You know, like you're just straight up fighting like one of the robots from Evangelion in the second level, right? Like that's what it looks like.
I think so. Yeah. It's definitely that vein of design. I mean, Ava didn't exist when this game came out. You know, Ava's like later on in the 90s.
Okay.
But yeah, it's that kind of, you know, biomechanical horror design that you know, Evangelion was definitely like pretty keyed in on too. Yeah, I really like the way this game looks. I think the graphics and sound in this are actually really good, the slowdown notwithstanding. I think this is a very attractively presented game.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I do like just how many weapons you seem to accumulate pretty quickly, just making you feel like, you know, a just chaos machine, just capable of just blowing away everything that stands in your path. Mm-hmm. I do like that.
Yeah. But. Yeah, definitely. You know, it's like I think I like what our type is cooking in the kitchen, I guess. But, you know, I know that this does have some hangups from just being an early Super Nintendo game. But I think that, you know, given what they were working with here, this is solid. Like, this is very good. So, I don't know. If we look at, are we ready to look at the list for this guy?
Yeah, let's go ahead and look at the list for this guy.
All right.
So right now it is in the C tier.
Right now it's in the C tier. I mean, I guess the question is, do we think that like the mechanics here are strong enough that maybe this deserves a spot in the next tier up from that? Because like, I think that on balance, I maybe would rather play this than a number of other games in this genre on the system. But, you know, it's a tricky thing because, like, we have said some good and bad things about it. So maybe keeping it in the C tier is the right move. What do you think? What's your feeling about this after having played it again?
I'm trying to find another shooter in the B tier to compare it to. It looks like we've got Darius Twin in there.
Darius Twin. Yeah, we got Darius Twin in there. And I guess, no, Blazion was not. Blazion was actually a...
Was Blazion the shooter where you can take over other ships?
It was, yes.
Okay. So that one is kind of like in there.
So it's kind of a shmup. Yeah,
it's got an interesting hook to it. It's hard to remember how I felt about those two, and those are two games that we'll be reevaluating again, you know, before too long.
In fairly short order in terms of, for Darius Twin, actually.
Yeah.
So...
I could be convinced to maybe bump Super R-Type up to the B tier. It's a pretty good one of these. It certainly holds up better than Gradius 3, which is also in the C tier right now.
I would rather play this than Gradius 3.
I think Super R-Type belongs with, at least as far as I can remember of these games for right now, I think like Darius Twin and Bio. What was that other one called?
Blazion. The Bio Cyborg Challenge.
Right. Yeah. I think that maybe those two shooters are.
And they're kind of of a kind with this.
Yeah. With Super R-Type more than Gradius 3 is at this point. So yeah. I'm okay with moving this up to B.
Let's move Super R-Type up to B then.
All right, there we go. So congratulations, Super R-Type. You've moved up in the world.
Yeah.
All right, well, with that out of the way, I guess we'll move on to the one non-shmup in this lineup for today.
Yeah.
And it's...
Let's talk about Draken.
Let's talk about Draken. So, Draken, this one comes to us from Kemco Seika, is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, it was developed by Infogrames, apparently, or Infogrames.
Developed by Infogrames and published by Kemco Seika on the SNES. So,
Yeah. So
Infogrames is entertainment, but is Draken entertainment? That's the question.
So I didn't have a whole lot of time to really revisit this one. Back when we first played this, you know, it remains even, you know, now like a very unique game on the Super NES. This is an RPG, but it's very different from the JRPGs that were on the system that gained a lot of notoriety on the system. This is more of a Western RPG. It's got more of a Western RPG feel to it. It's not turn-based. It is very interesting. Visually, visually, I think it's pretty cool. But
I agree with that.
Gameplay wise, it's
very strange.
Yeah. It's really clunky gameplay wise. And, you know, I obviously this game came out well before the SNES mouse was a thing. I don't know if they knew that the SNES mouse was going to be a thing and maybe like if there was any thought of like, you know, oh, hey, maybe we should wait before we put this out, or if like they just didn't even know that was ever going to be a peripheral. So, you know, they couldn't have. You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
It's very odd. It's very odd. I mean, I guess just to like describe how this game actually plays, you spend a lot of time in this game on essentially like a 3D world map, walking around in first person. Things are, because of the way that like Mode 7 and the way that this game's sort of whole design works, a lot of things are not visible on the map until you're right next to them, though you do have the option to go into like a map screen that shows you where everything is. And you will encounter random battles, and you will encounter essentially, you know, friendly locations or dungeons that you have to go into. And the weirdness starts immediately as soon as you encounter any of those things, because Your four characters appear on the screen. You control one of them at any one time directly, and battles happen automatically. Like, everybody just sort of walks around the screen bashing each other, and you can set what kind of action you want your characters to be doing, but it's all kind of just down to, like, the numbers slamming into each other at a certain point, in a way that's, like you said, very clunky and very hard to get a handle on.
Yeah, it almost reminds me of the Gambit system from Final Fantasy XII, except that you can only set one action per character.
Absolutely nothing going on.
Yeah. With it.
Like, it's like, what if the Gambit system was, you know, like a single action and you had to, like, wade through, like, three levels of very slow to access menus to change the action in real time. So, like, yeah, it's weird. And yeah, that menu system is really challenging to deal with.
Yeah, and it's a shame because it's not a super complex game when you really wrap your head around everything.
Not.
There's really, they just did this menu in a very, I'm going to say maybe like old fashioned, not very forward thinking way.
Sure.
Like, this game came out originally in 1989. So, you know, I can kind of understand, like, you know, if you're making this like an RPG like this, it's 1989, you're making this for like the Amiga system, you're making this for DOS computers and things like that. Like, you've got some limitations that you've probably got to work with. And maybe this was just the easiest way to get through all the menus. But, oh, they needed to do something else on the Super Nintendo that doesn't have the benefit of like a mouse and keyboard.
They sincerely did. I mean, the menu, you go into it by pressing an action button on the controller, and it just kind of is like a grid of nine icons that pops up on the bottom of the screen, next to kind of, well, it's always there actually, but there's a grid of nine icons that are next to the little like status indicators for your party of characters. And you can drill down into any of those icons for either an action that you'll do on the field or a menu that allows you to do the normal RPG stuff, like selecting what weapons and armor you want people to have, or this very simple, like, proto version of like a Gambit system type thing. And it's kludgy. Like, it's annoying to navigate, and it is tough to do that in the middle of anything else, definitely. Anything else that might be going on in the game world.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I wish that they had released this game for the Super Nintendo a few years down the line.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, maybe they could have incorporated the Super Nintendo mouse into it. Maybe a little bit more, like, time working on this specific port of the game would have meant, oh, hey, we've got some other like JRPGs that we can sort of take some ideas from to make these menus a little bit more manageable. There's an interesting game here. Like, this game is weird.
It's really weird. Yeah.
It is my kind of weird. Like, I really wish I could recommend this game because I love weird stuff like this. Like, I absolutely, like, just the idea that, you know, you're just going to wander around in this really janky first person view world map. I love it. Weird monsters just appear out of nowhere. Cool stuff. I love it. Day night cycle, where if you're wandering around at night, depending on the direction that you're looking at, a constellation might come to life and come down in a like really like unsettling, spooky kind of moment. Again, love it. Good stuff. This is my kind of weird. I'm even okay with like the idea of the characters just kind of like you assigning actions to characters and just letting them do stuff and just see like how the dice rolls. Basically, I'm totally fine with that. But the idea that like I need my mage to cast magic, so I set, you know, my mage to cast a magic spell. But if they run out of MP and can't cast magic anymore, they just sit there and don't do anything.
Right.
That's annoying. You know, navigating the menus, that's annoying. Having all the characters on screen in dungeons and having to physically navigate them as they walk very slowly to a door to get into the next room, that's annoying. there's all these little things that I feel like could have been tightened up. Like, why are all the characters just always on the screen in dungeons? Why not just give me like a, you know, an almost like uninvited Shadowgate sort of interface for dungeons and just like,
it really would have been better.
Yeah.
Cause we're nearly there, right? Like, we got the little menu, we've got, you know, basically like kind of point and click adventure game style puzzles in this. Yeah. If this just worked like a MacVenture game with a battle system, I would honestly enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah. I think that would have worked a lot better. I think it would have made the dungeons a lot easier to navigate. Yeah. I really, really wish I had the patience for this game, but I think you're going to really have to be the kind of person who really loves these crunchy old school computer RPGs to get into this. And even then, like, if you are that person, you're probably not going to want to play the Super Nintendo version of this. You're probably going to be playing it on the Amiga or the DOS or whatever. I wish they had done something to decrunchify those crunchy aspects of the game for the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I mean, as we've gone back to these early Super Nintendo games, I actually really feel like SimCity is casting a very long shadow across a lot of the other computer adaptations, because I feel like it proves that you can do a good translation of these mechanics to the Super Nintendo controller. And I know that comparing like an in-house game made by Nintendo to something that, you know, was not done by those folks is often a little unfair. It does really stick out in things like this where it's like, no, there's definitely a way this could have worked.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like, you know, Kotobuki Solution Company, which, you know, at the time was called Kemco. Like, this is the company that brought those MacVenture games to the NES, right?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, they've already shown that they can do that kind of thing. So, you know, they can take those PC experiences and, you know, make a good version of them that works for home consoles. And I'm sad that they didn't really do that here. Because I think there's a really good version of this game that could have occurred on the Super Nintendo.
Yep.
And I'm sad that I didn't get to play that. Because, again, this game is so weird, and I love the kind of weird it is. I just wish it were actually fun to play, but it isn't.
No, it's really not fun to play. And, like, it's conceptually interesting, but that's not really enough reason to suggest anyone play this game.
You know, you've really got to have a lot of patience for that sort of thing to get anything out of this game. And I am just not that person. And I don't know how many people possibly could be.
Love the music, though. Good music on the overworld, both day and night.
Yeah, good music. Even the weird music in this is, you know, like, again, it's weird. I like weird.
Yeah. So let's look at, do you want to look at the list and see if where we have it right now is the right place for it?
Yeah, so I think initially we had ranked this one pretty high.
We did,
but
yeah.
I think it kind of fell out of favor because as we kind of thought more about what this game is,
yeah,
and thinking like, you know, it's interesting from the outset, but I don't know if that sort of thing can sustain itself. And that, you know, caused us to sort of think less and less of it over time until it ended up in the D tier.
Yeah, which honestly is still probably where I would put it, because it's weird and it's not fun to play, but it is trying to do something that I find compelling. And it's not a disaster. It's just nothing about it really works the way you want it to, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's ever, like, tried making a substantial patch for this game that overhauls the menu system, or if such a thing is even possible, but
yeah,
if something like that is out there, I'd be really interested in trying it out, because I really want a version of this game that I can experience without having to, you know, deal with the clunkiness of its UI, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And eventually, actually not tremendously far in the future, we will get a weird sequel to this for the Super Nintendo. It is a 94 game, so we'll play it eventually. But that game pretty much runs away from all the interesting stuff about this one. And
yeah,
it's not terribly exciting seeming to me. So, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like it doesn't have the same UI issues that this game does. But yeah, it from what I know about it, it doesn't do the weird stuff that this game does.
And
that's the stuff I want to keep. That's the stuff I like. I want the weird stuff.
Yeah. Throw the baby out with the bathwater sort of situation there. So
yeah, I mean, like, you know, just to talk a little bit more about some of the mechanics of Draken before we wrap this one up, you know, like,
yeah,
you've got like all these different verbs that you can do, which, you know, isn't atypical of Western RPGs of this era, where, you know, like, hey, you know, click on this button with the lips and then click on the thing you want to talk to if you want to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
You know, you've got all these different actions that you can do. And I just don't know if this game really requires all of that. Like, just a more general, like, contextual interact with the thing button feels like it would have been just fine in a game like this, especially on the Super Nintendo.
Right.
You know, it's like you simplify that. You simplify the in-dungeon mechanics. Maybe give the characters the option to do, you know, to have like a backup action if for some reason they can't do their primary action, and just make those menus easier to navigate. And you've got a game I can recommend. Like, is this ever like going to be a top RPG on the system? No, but
no.
This makes it easy enough to interact with that I think it would have been worth, you know, saying, hey, do you like weird games? Check this game out. It's weird and I think you'll like it. I can't say that because of how clunky everything is and just how annoying it is to actually physically play. But all right, that's Draken, I think. Did we have anything else we needed to say about it, or?
No, that's going to do it for me on Draken as well.
All right.
I think it ultimately ended up in the right place for it on our list, and there it will stay.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the final game of the day.
Yeah.
Or the night, whenever mm-hmm. you're listening to this. Yeah. This is another shmup. This one is called UN Squadron. And this one is based on a manga called Area 88. It's had a little bit of its manga roots scrubbed.
Not all of it, though, which is interesting to me.
And honestly, I'm not sure why they didn't just keep the name Area 88. I don't know what UN Squadron brings to the table here that they thought that would resonate with American gamers more than Area 88.
Yeah, I don't really get it. Because the name Area 88 is still very present in the, like, the graphics and in the instruction manual, which pretty much just gives you the Area 88 premise unaltered. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it, you know, it's kind of an interesting premise. I'm not going to go too much into Area 88 stuff here. I was actually on an episode of Play Comics a while ago talking about UN Squadron and Area 88, and I will try to remember to put a link to that in the show notes on our website, which is snescapades.show, by the way. If you haven't been there yet, feel free to go check it out. So this is another shmup. This one is made by Capcom, and this one is a lot of fun. It is not quite as...
I
feel like it's not quite as involved as some of the other games. Like, this feels like a simpler, arcadey kind of shooter, but I think that's to its benefit.
I agree. I really like this game. So, I mean, this one, it's interesting because, yes, it is less involved in some ways, but it actually has more going on in other dimensions than some of these do. Like, there's a larger metagame just around the levels that I think is really cool here. Because basically it's like you are playing as one of three different fighter pilots who have been launched from the Area 88 military base. There is an encroaching army represented on a map you see between levels by, various different symbols denoting different kinds of level. And you can past the first level, you can pick where you can pick multiple different options for the next level you want to take on, and those vary from, you know, pretty standard shooter type levels where you're moving shmup levels where you're moving through an area, you fight a bunch of things, and then you fight a big boss at the end of it, to ones where you are sort of dive bombing a like a supplies base for the enemy forces. The enemies will advance towards Area 88, you'll be called in to fight certain ones specifically if they manage to reach it. And yeah, you get to upgrade, you get money from your performance in the levels that you can use to buy weapons or buy better planes with. The different pilots have different options for which weapons they can use and, the kind of like the level of damage they take. And yeah, it's just neat. The levels are pretty short, but that kind of just works with this whole thing because you're in and out of levels and doing stuff between levels in a different sort of rhythm than you would find in like an R-Type or a Gradius.
Yeah, yeah. I really like this one. I like how they've changed certain aspects of this game from the arcade version to, you know, make it work a little bit better as a home console game. Like in the arcade version, specific planes are tied to specific pilots, whereas in this game, every pilot just starts with the same basic plane, but each pilot has a special skill that they're really good at. One of them recovers from damage faster. One of them learns new skills faster. One can arm his plane with multiple secondary weapons. I also like the way that this game kind of ties into its source material, which is about, you know, this mercenary group where, you know, you've got all these pilots who are there to earn money, but also not all of them are there entirely voluntarily. You know, some of them are there because they're forced to pay off a debt. And once you're, you know, a pilot there, you can't really leave unless you either, you know, work through the length of your contract or earn enough money to buy out your contract and leave that way. So like you can, you know, you earn money by shooting down enemies. You build up money pretty quickly, but then you need to use that money to buy secondary weapons and even new planes if that's what you want to do. But there's a little bit of a risk involved because if you get shot down, anything that you bought that round is just gone. So it can eat through your cash reserves pretty quickly. It's kind of an interesting way of going about those kinds of things instead of it just being like, oh, hey, you died, so now you're going to have to go through the level again and pick up power-ups again. It's like, hey, you died. You get to keep all the... Well, I mean, you didn't really die. Your plane got shot down. You get to keep all the money that you earned from everything that you shot down, but you've got to, you know, build up your arsenal all over again with that money. I think it's a more interesting way of handling the death spiral and things like that than a lot of other games. I think it's an inspired idea that, you know, is probably inspired by the source material.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what it results in is essentially like a shmup that can be approached and played by more people without losing any of like the essence of what makes these kinds of games fun.
Yeah, I really like the way it handles damage in this game. Like whenever you get hit, you end up in a sort of like a danger state where if you get hit again, you will, just immediately lose a life. But if you can, you know, hold out long enough without getting hit, then you'll recover. But, you know, your plane will be, you know, less a little bit of health. So basically you lose a plane anytime you get hit, you know, twice in succession, or if you just get hit enough throughout the level that you finally deplete that entire fuel gauge. I think that's, you know, also pretty smart way of doing that. And again, you know, like if you're not quite as good at, you know, dodging shots, you can always take control of the pilot who recovers from that danger state faster until, you know, you get better at dodging, and then, you know, maybe you move on to one of the other pilots who are, you know, who don't have that ability but do learn skills a little bit faster. Yeah, I think there's a lot of neat things going on here. I think that this game has got some really cool ideas that solve a lot of the problems that we tend to bring up with shmups, especially, you know, as people who, again, you know, I mean, at least in my case, I am not somebody who goes out normally looking for these kinds of games. But yeah, this one sands off the rough edges enough for me that I feel like this one's a lot more approachable without feeling like it's a shmup for babies. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree completely. And yeah, I think that, yeah, this whole thing is pretty distinctive. It's pretty unique, and it really works. And to go along with that, also, it has really nice graphics and music. I think that, like, you know, after seeing kind of the general sort of sci-fi anime aesthetic of, like, every other shmup we've encountered on the system so far, seeing one that just has, like, you know, really nice-looking planes and, like, you know, backgrounds that look more or less like, you know, real parts of the world is, like, a really cool and interesting change. And yeah, like, this one also does have some issues with slowdown, but not nearly to the same extent as Gradius or R-Type, and it's very fun to play and fun to look at. There's a lot of, like, diverse you know, level settings, and yeah, just you know, it's like we've been saying, a really approachable game. So yeah, I think this game's great. I think it's a real standout for you know, early Super Nintendo.
Yeah, and one other thing I really do like about this game when comparing it to a lot of other shmups is that, you know, like something, you know, we kind of talked about when we were talking about R-Type just a little bit ago, you know, there's probably a person piloting that ship, but, you know, that person isn't a character. Like, this is a game about the ship. This is not that. This is a game about the characters. You get really nice character portraits. Those character portraits stay on the screen throughout the level. They react to getting hit in a way that just, you know, gives the game a lot more personality than a lot of shmups tend to have.
Yeah.
You know, I'm honestly just, like, kind of surprised more shmups on the SNES didn't go for this kind of aesthetic, you know, of, like,
I know,
making the characters, you know, in the vehicles more like actual characters and giving them personality like that. It's
right. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't see a lot of that going forward, and it's kind of a shame. I think this is a really good shmup that, you know, other companies could have borrowed ideas from to maybe make their games work a little bit better for the SNES. But
yeah, as it stands, this stays kind of unique for at least as far as we've seen into to the system's future. So,
yep. So yeah, I'm not sure I've got a whole lot more to say about it.
No, nor do I. We had this set as obviously an A-tier game. Originally, it is still in the A tier. Do you think there's any reason to reconsider that at all?
No, not at all. I think this is definitely
an A tier game. Yeah. This is one of the best of the first year of the Super Nintendo, surely. So yeah, great game. Really happy to play it again. And as it did before, it made me want to read some of the Area 88 manga. Maybe I'll actually even do that this time.
Yeah, I did read some of it for, you know, when I was getting ready to go on Play Comics. So I think it's a pretty, I think it's a pretty interesting series. And
cool.
I can't
cool.
remember if I finished it, but yeah, I might go back to it as well. Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's probably going to do it for us for this one, our one featured episode for September of 93. 91, September of 91, my goodness.
Yeah, that is going to do it for September 91. All that's left now is to do the wrap, and that's going to be the next episode. Mm-hmm. We've got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6, or maybe 7? Maybe 7 games. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens in the
maybe
wrap.
Maybe 7, my goodness. Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be much easier to get through than some of the other wraps that we've done, but
it certainly will. And we hope you enjoyed our look at these three games. We hope you come back for the wrap. And until next time, I'm Emmy Zero.
I'm Chase Keys.
Play it loud.
For show notes, game rankings, links to social media, research references, and more, check out our website, snescapades.show. Our intro-outro song is How Now Brown Cow by TechnoAxe, who very generously offers a ton of great music for free at technoaxe.com, TEKNOAXE.com. Thanks for listening.